May be seated.
I know we don't do this very often, but I want to just praise God for our praise team. They do a phenomenal job week in and week out, bringing the glory of God right into this house here. It makes my job and anyone else who stands behind this pulpit so much easier when the presence is already here when we step up. Just to ask if, yeah, thank you. I was going to ask if you could bring the lights up, or this is going to be really short. Because standing up here, you can't really see too much when these lights are out. We say this a lot, okay? Most of us speakers, including Don, although he does it a little bit more than the rest of us, we don't really collaborate on what we're going to be preaching on with the worship team. Angie just picks songs. I know she prays and spends time in the Word and spends time with Corey and Robert, and they decide what they're going to play, when they're going to play it. But things just seem to flow right with whatever the message is going to be. And I know they do this sometimes a month and a half out. And even the speaker doesn't even know what he's going to speak about at that point. So I just want to thank you, because No Longer Slaves leads right into my message today. We're going to be talking about one of the judges in the book of Judges. Now, I know me, I always thought, these guys don't really seem like judges. Why are they calling it judges? So I did some research this week, and judges, in the biblical sense, are not like Judge Alito or Clarence Thomas or anything like that. They don't weigh decisions and who's right and who's wrong. God pretty much told them who was right. That was his team. And their job as judges were to go whoop up on the bad guys and break their people out of slavery or break them out of bondage or terrible oversight. Maybe we should change the way our judges work here. So that's the judges. They don't rule with they rule with swords instead of with gavels. The biblical judges that we're talking about. Now, I have to just take a sidebar here. One of my most favorite things about being a dad is my nighttime ritual with the kids. That's always really blessed me from the time Michaela was just a wee little, you know, wee little baby and couldn't even really talk. I remember taking her in, putting her in her crib and just praying over her and thanking God for her and just praying a blessing over her life. And then when I would say scripture over her. And then when Gianna came along, that got accentuated even more, because Michaela was 6 and a half at that point. But what some of you know is that when Gianna was born, they were in a hurry. The medical staff was really in a hurry, because I could, you know, I'm standing right there and I'm a little savvy with medical stuff. And I could see on the monitor something wasn't right. And the guy kept checking. And the midwife kept checking. And finally he's like, sorry, but he's like getting his arm way up in there to where it shouldn't be. But I know they're helping, and I wasn't sweating it too bad, but I knew something wasn't right. And Gianna's head is delivered, and he is still holding up because the cord was wrapped around her neck. They knew that because she wasn't getting enough oxygen. And she wasn't, you know, the blood was too constricting. It wasn't moving properly. And they can tell all that by checking out the monitor that's there. So anyway, she delivered the rest of the way. Angie was doing most of the work from what I could tell. But she was delivered, and if you haven't been there yet, it's kind of a quick process, bam, bam, and then anyway, the guy hands me the scissors real quick to cut the umbilical cord. And if you've never done it, it's way tougher than you would think cutting anything is. I mean, they give you these scissors that'll cut through pennies. And I've done it. Like, I have a pair of these scissors. And it's all you can do to get through this thing. So I quickly cut the cord because I know they're in a hurry. And they get her underneath the fry lamp, as I call it, you know. And she's not crying yet. She's not breathing. And they had her over there for over a minute, which seems like an eternity when you're waiting to hear your baby cry. After that first cry, you don't want them crying anymore, but that first cry you want to hear. So I remember distinctly praying at that point. And I remember my prayer. I said, God, you gave her to us. She's yours. You do what you want. But I would really appreciate it if you could have her breathe right now. And a few seconds later, she started screaming. But they were doing whatever they were doing over there with her to try and help the cause. But I know who was in control. So that really intensified my prayer. And every night, almost without fail, when I'm praying with Gianna, I thank God for breathing life into her. Now, over 8 years ago. Because it was truly Him. But anyway, that nighttime ritual is really special to me. And I typically am telling the kids a story, and I let them pick whether I'm going to read a story or tell a story with my words, as they call it. And, you know, sometimes I'll read out of the Bible. And I know I don't read out of there every night to the kids, okay? But, you know, we will go over Scripture. And sometimes they pick a book, one of their bath time books or whatever the goofy book is that they want to read out of. It's usually the same book every night for like 2 years. And then it'll finally change. But sometimes they want me to make up a story and I make one up on the spot. Sometimes I have normal characters that I use. Other times it's a brand new one that we just kind of create. And so that's always a very fun time for me. And About 2 months ago, when I was putting Gianna to bed, Michaela doesn't really care for the story so much anymore. So just so when she listens to this, I'm covering your butt. She doesn't care for the stories too much anymore. But Gianna, sometimes she'll join us for the story. But Gianna still really does. And we were talking about Samson one night. I was talking to her about Samson and Delilah. And she kind of cocked her head like she didn't really know who I was talking about, and it didn't come to her right away. And I said, so you don't remember who Samson and Delilah are? And she said, no. I said, all right, well, we'll find out tomorrow. And I pulled the Bible out the next night, and we read the story of Samson and Delilah. And as I was doing that, God revealed some fresh stuff to me that I had never seen before as I went through the story. So I'm going to share some of that with you today, if that's okay. I found four main lessons, from this story of Samson. First one is the title of the message, if you haven't, it's up there. Stay strong. And we're going to be Mostly in Judges 16, but sometimes we'll jump back to Judges 14 and Judges 15. Because the story of Samson actually starts in Judges 13, but that's mostly talking about him while he's not even conceived yet. And the angel of the Lord visits his mom and says, "Hey, I know you're barren. You're actually sterile, but we're going to change that. God's going to change that. He's going to make you have a son. And I need you to start taking care of yourself because he's supposed to be a Nazarite from within the womb." And he tells her some stuff that she's not allowed to do. So she's not allowed to have anything to do with grapes, okay? Grape juice, wine, anything like that. And as I researched it back in where God tells us about that is in Numbers 6, 1 through 21. He lists a bunch of stuff, like no grape products at all. Like you can't have the skin off a grape, you can't have a grape seed, nothing. Okay. He does share with her about not eating any unclean food. And there was a whole rigmarole of what they had to do about eating food that was proper and not proper. But one of the major points he said, don't let a razor ever touch his head. Now, there's one more thing they add in Numbers that he didn't mention to her, probably for a good reason, is the Nazarites, when they dedicated themselves to God for a certain amount of time, okay, they were not allowed to be around dead stuff, okay? And if by accident, like they, even if your mom died, you couldn't go to her funeral. If your dad died, sorry, you're out of luck, okay? But if by accident somebody died in your presence, like just, you know, and died, couldn't help that, but there was a whole process they had to go through, and they had to start their dedication to God over again. Like, the time that they put in, let's say they were doing it for 40 days, and they were on day 39, they didn't count. You had to start it all over again. So, but God didn't mention that one to her. The angel of the Lord didn't mention that to Samson's mom as one of the things he had to worry about. So the first point I want to bring up, first lesson from Samson, is stay strong, resist temptation. Stay strong, resist temptation. See, Samson's first recorded speech is in Judges 14:2. I'm sure he talked before this, but they didn't write it down. But the first thing that they actually wrote down was, he said, when he returned, he said to his father and mother, "I've seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife." His father and mother replied, "Isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife?" But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me. She's the right one for me." His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over all of Israel. See, we're going to find out shortly that things didn't go so well in this marriage. But his next encounter with the woman is in Judges 16:1. One day, Samson went to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute. He went in to spend the night with her. The people of Gaza were told, "Samson's here!" So they surrounded the place, and they lay in wait for him all night at the city gate. They made no move during the night, saying, "At dawn, we'll kill him." But Samson lay there only until the middle of the night. And he got up, he took hold of the doors of the city gate, together with the two posts, and he tore them loose, bar and all. He lifted them up to his shoulders, and he carried them up to the top of the hill, which when I checked was a couple miles away. Sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. So as you can see so far, he's very fond of the ladies. And it will tend to get him in quite a bit of trouble. Lesson number two. Stay strong, don't be used. Don't let the enemy use you in his plans for ill. See, take note, there's two people up here in this picture. Yeah, one's being tempted, but the other one is being used as the tempter. Judges 14, we're going to start in verse 5. Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring towards him. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him, so he tore the lion apart with his bare hands, as he might have torn a young goat. But he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done, and went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. Sometime later, he went back to marry her. He turned aside to look at the lion's carcass, and in it he saw a swarm of bees and some honey. He scooped out the honey with his hands, and he ate it along the way. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they ate it too. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey out of the lion's carcass. Now his father went down to see the woman, and Samson held a feast there, which was customary for young men. Basically, it's like a big bachelor party. When the people saw him, they chose 30 men for his company to be his companions. Eventually, Samson says, "Let me tell you a riddle. If you can give me the answer within the 7 days of this feast," that's some bachelor party, 7 days. "If you can give me the answer within 7 days of this feast, I'll give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. If you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes." And they're like, "Tell us the riddle. Let's hear it." So Samson said, "Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet." So for 3 days, they couldn't give him the answer. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, "Coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death. Did you invite us here to steal our property?" Then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing, "You hate me. You don't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer." "I haven't explained it to my father or mother," he replied. "So why should I explain it to you?" He cried the whole 7 days of the feast. She cried the whole 7 days of the feast. So on the seventh day, he finally told her, because she continued to press him. She in turn explained the riddles to her people. Before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town said to him, "What's sweeter than honey? What's stronger than a lion?" See, Samson said to them, "I don't advise this. If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved the riddle." I always think, that may not be the best thing to say to your wife who you haven't even had a honeymoon with yet. May not go so well. But you can see that she's being very deceptive and manipulative. Somebody else that was used, Delilah. She's a little more well known for her nagging. Judges 16, 5 through 22. See, after Samson had a thing for her, and the Philistines found out, the rulers of the Philistines went and said, "See if you can lure him into showing us the secret of his strength and how we can overpower him so we may subdue him and tie him up. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver. Now, I always struggle with measurements from the old days. I'm not a carpenter and figure all that stuff out, but I always have to do some research to figure out what 1,100 shekels is. 1,100 shekels is roughly 13 kilograms. Now, I do know kilograms because I've learned that in my lifting. Okay, this is a 12 kilogram kettlebell. It's heavy. Now, Samson can pick it up no problem, but Delilah, on the other hand, she may have an issue. 1,100 shekels, 13 kilograms. And each one of the rulers were going to give her 13 kilograms of silver. So I had to do some research on that too, because I'm just kind of a math guy. I looked up the price of silver a couple days ago. It changes all the time, every day. Okay, so I didn't do it right before I walked in here. But a couple days ago, I think it's Friday, Thursday, something like that, it was $18.73 an ounce. Now, you take that times 16, because that'll get you a pound, it's $299.68 a pound. Since there are 2.2 pounds per kilogram, that ends up being $659.30 per kilogram. Times 13, to get you this much, is $8,570.85. Now, the best research I could do to find out how many of the leaders they were talking about was five, which gives you $42,854.25 in today's money. Now, I don't know what Delilah made, but I'm sure that would have helped her out. So, verse 6, same chapter 16. So, Delilah said to Samson, "Tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued." Samson answered her, "If anyone ties me with seven fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, I'll become as weak as any other man." False. Then the rulers of the Philistines brought seven fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, and she tied them with them. With the men hidden in the room, she called to them. She called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the bowstrings as easily as a piece of string, snaps when it comes close to a flame. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. Now, I take pause there because if these guys were hiding in the room with her, this must have been a pretty big place. You know, it's not like the Bible stories you see that there's like one little room there and, you know, where's the guy going to hide? Where are they going to hide? Enough guys to beat up the strongest guy probably that ever lived. So I'm betting she had a pretty big house. Verse 10. Delilah then said to Samson, "You've made a fool of me. You lied to me. Come on now. Tell me how you can be tied." Nag, nag, nag. He said, "If anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I'll become as weak as any other man." So Delilah took two new ropes and tied him with them. Then with men hidden in the room, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the ropes off his arms like they were threads. Delilah then said to Samson, "All this time you've been making a fool of me, lying to me. How can you be tied?" Again, nag, nag, nag. He replied, "If you weave the seven braids of my head into the fabric of the loom and tighten it with a pin, I'll become as weak as any other man." So while he was sleeping, Delilah took the 7 braids of his head, wove them into a fabric, and tightened them with a pin. Now, getting a little dicey there. Again, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep, pulled up the pin from the loom with the fabric. Then she said to him, "How can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? This is the 3rd time you've made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength. With such nagging..." Yeah, that's right in Scripture. Verse 16. "With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was sick to death of it. He told her everything. 'No razor's ever been used on my head,' he said, 'because I've been a Nazarite, dedicated to God from my mother's womb. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as any other man.' When Delilah saw that he told her everything, she sent the word to the rulers of the Philistines, 'Come back one more time. He told me everything.' So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. After putting him to sleep on her lap, she called for someone to shave off his 7 braids of his hair, and so began to subdue him, and his strength left him. Then she called, 'Samson, the Philistines are upon you.' He awoke from his sleep and thought, 'I'll go out as before and shake myself free.' But he did not know that the Lord had left him. The Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, took him down to Gaza, binding him with bronze shackles. They set him to grinding grain in the prison. But the hair on his head began to grow after it had been shaved." See, everyone blames Delilah for being horrible. I mean, they look at her and like, how could she do such a thing? And that's horrendous. You know, tricking your boyfriend or maybe your client, because it doesn't really say. But from our deductions here, she had to have a pretty big place. See, yeah, she's horrible. But at least she had some sort of incentive. What is it, $42,000 worth of silver? See, do we do nagging? Do we say, "Go cut the grass. Cut the grass. How come you didn't cut the grass? The hedges look like heck." Fix the steps. Do we say, "Hey, come on, why don't you give me a massage? Why don't you, let's go talk back in the room." You say, "Fix me some dinner." How about this? "Clean your room. Pick up your toys. Get your homework done." Nag, nag, nag. See, Proverbs 21:19 says, "It's better to live in a desert than with a quarrelsome and nagging wife." I don't know why they didn't put a guy in there too, but that's what Scripture says. So, Samson relented. He told her. After, one of the things God really revealed to me the first time through was, look, he was talking about bowstrings. That has nothing to do with the real truth. He's keeping a secret, like God wants him to. Tie me with some new ropes. Again, has really nothing to do with the real secret. Hey, but then she starts beating him down. Nag, 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 nag. okay, if you weave my hair, whoa, that's getting a little close. Weave my hair into a piece of fabric, tighten it up with a pin, that'll make me weak. What if when he jumped up, his hair got caught? See, a lot of people think that Samson's strength is in his hair. It's not in his hair. That's just one of the rules that God gave him about keeping his strength. His hair is not any stronger than yours or mine. She cut it with a razor, or somebody cut it with a razor. It's not like super strong hair. He probably had to use conditioner just like the rest of us. But he got really close because she was beating him down, beaten down, beaten down. Then he finally just gives up. It's like, look, I can't take it anymore. Can't take it. And he tells her. Why he would do that, I don't know. Because already she had him jumped when he said it was a bowstring. She had him jumped when he told her it was the ropes. Even weaving her hair. She had him jump then. Everything he told her, they did it and beat him up. So why would he try and even think about telling her the truth, knowing that she was going to do it? That leads us to the next point. Stay strong. Don't play. Defeat him. Now who's him? Him's the enemy. Satan. Now, I'm not calling the naggers in the room Satan. But I am saying that Satan's probably using you to get his will done. Not that you're a voluntary participant. But Samson is just as much to blame. See, Samson thought it was like a game. He forgot who he was dealing with. The enemy is no joke. You can't take him lightly. See, Samson wanted to keep toying with his enemy his whole life. Think about back with the riddle. He's at his bachelor party having a good time. And he tells him a riddle. But then he gave up and told her the secret. And guess what? He paid the penalty. Well, not really, because Samson went out and whooped up one of the Philistines. What about the foxes? I haven't told you about that yet. Chapter 15 of Judges, verses 1 through 8. Later on, at that time of the wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife. He said, I'm going to my wife's room, but her father wouldn't let him go in. Now see, I don't think I told you that his wife, they didn't really have their honeymoon yet. He got all mad and left because when he had to go out and kill these 30 Philistines and take their clothes and their cloaks and give them to the guys that he promised them to, he was pretty upset. And when he had gotten back, the father-in-law had given his wife to like his best man. One of the 30 guys that they had attending him, I mean, it must have been a huge wedding party, but one of the 30 guys, the father-in-law gave his wife to and said, here you go. You be his wife now. Really, really uncool. Father-in-law said, I was so sure you hated him that I gave her to your companion. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead. Then Samson said to them, this time I have the right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them. So he went out and caught 300 foxes, tied them up tail to tail in pairs. Then he fastened a torch to every pair of tails, lit the torches, and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. He burned up the shocks and the standing grain together with the vineyards and the olive groves, crippling them economically. When the Philistines asked, "Who did this?" they were told, "Samson, the Timnite's son-in-law, because his wife had been given to his companion." So the Philistines went up and burned her and her father to death. Samson said to them, "Since you have acted like this, I swear I will not stop until I get my revenge on you." So, basically, he runs off and hides in the cave for a little bit. And then his people were really scared because the Philistines were getting ticked. They lost all their crops, all their food, their money, and they want Samson. So they come, talk to Samson's compadres, and say, "Hey, we want this guy. We need him." And they were ruling over the whole nation at this point. So his buddies go and find Samson in the cave, and they say, "Look, we got to take you and give you to the Philistines." He's like, "What? Why?" And they said, "Well, because they're really mad. And what are you doing? What are you thinking about trying to attack them?" And Samson's like, "Well, as long as you promise not to kill me." I'm like, "Okay, we won't kill you. We'll just tie you up and we'll hand you over to him." So they tied him with two new ropes. That's what he said earlier. You know, tie me with two new ropes. Tied him with two new ropes, took him up. And right as they were approaching, the Philistines came running at him yelling. And in verse 15, finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it and struck down 1,000 men. Of course, he ripped out of his ropes like they were nothing. Then Samson said, "With a donkey's jawbone, I made a donkey of them." Some Bibles are a little more vivid than that. "With a donkey's jawbone, I have made donkeys of them. With a donkey's jawbone, I have killed 1,000 men." When he finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone in a place called Rahem-Lehi. That means Jawbone Hill. He was mocking them, making fun of them. He thought it was a big game. The doors of the city gate, remember? He was with a prostitute that night. And the guys are surrounding the city gate. So he gets up, probably around midnight or so, and rips the whole door gate contraption up on his shoulders and carries it a couple miles away. Just to show he could do it. There's no reason for him to do that. Just to show he could do it. To have fun. Make sport of them. Lying to Delilah. It was a game. He kept telling her, and then she kept doing it. He'd tell her, and then she'd do it. What was he think was going to happen? She called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He woke from his sleep and thought, "I'll go out just like before and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had left him. The Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes. They took him down to Gaza, binding him with the bronze shackles, and set him to grinding grain in the prison. But the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. See, Samson was so preoccupied with his lust that he didn't even realize that the Lord had left him. He loved this lady, but it was more than just love. He was supposed to be set apart for the Lord as a Nazarite, not to be lusting after the opposite sex. Brings us to point number 4. Stay strong. Lost sight? Call out. Lost is a sin committed by the eyes. I'm not sure why the Philistines gouged his eyes out, but I do know that afterwards he had time to reflect on his wrongdoings without being distracted by them again. They decided to have a party, the Philistines, and offer a sacrifice to Dagon to celebrate the capturing of Samson. See, this is the same false god that Pastor Don talked about 2 weeks ago when they took the Ark of the Covenant. You know, they beat up on the Israelites and they took the Ark of the Covenant, took it back to their temple. Now, just to remind you, when they took it back to the temple, in the morning, the statue of Dagon had fallen right on its face. They propped it back up. The next morning, it not only fell, but was broken into pieces. Same Dagon, same God, same people. See, Samson, for reference, lived at the same time. My research showed that Samson was probably getting married as a late teenager, right at the time the Philistines won the battle and at Ebenezer, captured the ark. So most of the time Samson was doing his judging, the ark was resting at Abinadab's house. I was trying to put these pieces together because the books don't always make it clear. After Samson had his head shaved and his eyes gouged out, all he had to do was call out to God. Verse 25, while they were in high spirits, they shouted, "Bring out Samson to entertain us." So they called Samson out of the prison and he performed for them. I don't know what he did, if he was juggling or standing on his head or what. I got no idea. But he didn't have his strength anymore. Probably making fun of him. It reminded me this summer when I was having my back issues and neck issues. I was in crippling pain. I had just gotten done lifting, but I couldn't feel my arm. Like I was training, trying to make the national team again. So my body shape looked the same. Like my arms were still developed and you know, everything else. I knew the strength was there. But the doctor told me from the MRI that something's getting blocked between here till it gets down your arm. Because he had me strength, like he just strength tested me with his hands after he did the MRI. He said, "Okay, keep your fingers apart." So he goes over here and he couldn't squeeze them together. And he over here is like it's nothing. And I'm right dominant. So it should have been a lot easier for me to stay open over here than it was over here. I had no strength because something was being blocked in my neck. But I looked the same, like people wouldn't want to arm wrestle me, but they, you know, it just wasn't working. So Samson wasn't working for some reason because God took his strength away. Okay. While they had, we're on verse 26. Samson said to the servant who held his hand, "Put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple, so that I may lean against them." Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of Philistines were there. And on the roof, there was about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Samson prayed to the Lord, "Sovereign Lord, remember me. Please, God, strengthen me just one more time. And let me get, with one blow, the revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes." Then Samson reached towards the two central pillars on which the temple stood. Bracing himself against them, his right hand on one, his left hand on the other, Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he pushed with all his might, and down came the temple and the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than when he lived. Then his brothers and sisters and his father's whole family went down to get him. They brought him back, buried him between Zorah and Eshtol in the tomb of Manoah, his father. He had led or judged Israel for 20 years. I want to invite the worship team to come back, because in just a minute, I'm going to make an invitation to come forward. The gates of the city in Judges 16, see, they were like the stone placed in front of Christ's tomb. Both were intended to keep them bound in death, to assure that there was no way of escape, but both were removed forevermore. God always provides a way of escape for us. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 10:13 that no temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, He will also provide a way out so you can endure it. What are you being tempted with and tried with today? What you need to resist temptation and stay strong. Are you the one causing someone else to stumble? By nagging, being the tempter? Don't be used by the enemy. Stay strong. Are you playing with fire? Are you seeing how far you can take your sin without consequences today? Stay strong. Don't play. Defeat him. Have you lost your way? Are you spiritually blinded? Do you need another redo? Call out. Call out. It's the only way to stay strong. See, even when Samson messed up beyond what anyone could imagine, just imagine being the strongest guy probably ever lived, and you gave it all away. You were in charge of getting your people out of bondage, but you goofed up and gave it away. For what? But see, even when he had done that, and God left him, the Lord left him, God still had a redemptive plan for him. It says in verse 22, but the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. So, my question for you, is your hair still growing? Is your hair still growing? Because if it is, God's making a way for you too. Call out to him. I ask you to come forward this morning. Let someone pray with you. Pray by yourself if you want. But come forward. Call out to God so that he can make you stronger.